The funded legal education program is a popular option among junior officers that would like to be a lawyer, or officers that potentially don't like their current branch and want to take a dynamic change of direction in their career. The funded legal education program is open to officers in the ranks of second lieutenant through junior captain and requires an additional duty service obligation. On today's episode, we sit down with Captain Hannah He, a recent graduate of the FLEP program and JAG officer currently serving and stationed at Fort Drum, New York with the 10th Mountain Division. We'll pick her brain on the ins and outs of the program and Hannah's own advice for the people that may be on the fence about competing for one of these highly coveted positions. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, Episode 45, Everything You Need to Know About FLEP, Part 1. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Major Micah Klein, your host for today's episode. With us today is Captain Hannah He. Hannah, thanks for being willing to take your time out of your busy schedule and patching into us from a combat theater to chat with us and our listeners about the FLEP program. This is a hot-button topic for many people, and we know that there are a lot of people out there who have asked us about this episode, and we're finally happy to put it together for them. So to start this off, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself, and then what piqued your interest in the FLEP program? How did you hear about it?
Yeah, so... I went to Mary Baldwin College in Virginia. I was in the Corps of Cadets. There I was a political science and history major, so law school was kind of always an option, I think, going through my undergrad, going through ROTC, and I'd considered doing an ed delay during my junior year there. I was going to be very young. I know when I graduated from college, a lot of my professors in military science kind of encouraged me to maybe consider the ed delay option and consider going to law school because that might be a better route. But that kind of lit my fire a little bit, made me want to prove them all that I could be a great officer, even very young, even as a very short female. So I decided to roll the dice, take my chances, go active duty, see what happens, and then maybe see down the line what my options for law school would be. So going into my first year as an officer, I branched signal, went through bullock 2, bullock 3, got to my first unit, deployed within 2 weeks of getting to my first unit as a platoon leader. And signal was not my first choice for branch, but I absolutely loved it. And coming back, being a platoon leader in an XO, working with my commander, I saw how much they really needed to work with the JAGs, with our child councils, to keep good order and discipline, to make sure that people get chaptered that needed to be chaptered, or any military justice matters that happened, all of the ad law stuff that goes on to make sure that the Army runs smoothly, like investigations and flipples, all of those kinds of things. I started to realize that being a JAG probably would be pretty cool, be a good way to really stay in touch with the Army, be able to really help commanders on a day-to-day basis with what they need to do. So, like I said, I knew that law school would be an option. I'd heard rumors about a program for that. So I talked to some of the JAGs at Fort Gordon where I was stationed, and they told me about the FLEP program. And turns out there was actually another captain who was in my unit. He was an ordnance officer. He was applying for the FLEP program as well the same year I started looking at all of this. So he really helped me through the process, through studying for the LSAT, through getting all my paperwork together. He got picked up a year before I did, so he is now also a JAG officer. And so that's kind of the path that I took to applying, to hearing about it, and then finally getting accepted.
Wow, that's pretty sweet. So I know that a lot of chain of commands tend to be weary on the whole sending their officers to programs that aren't, like, you know, related to their branch. I think that's somewhat related to the mirror image fallacy, where people look at themselves in the mirror and they say, well, I was successful doing this route, so you have to do this route to also be successful. And so I think there is some concern among the force about applying to some of these programs that are not inherent to those branches because they don't want to be seen as disloyal in the event that they don't get selected for the program. Was any of that going on through your mind when you were thinking about doing the FLEP program? And if it was, what did you do to sort of, like, counter that?
Yeah, I think it was something that was in my mind, being, especially being at Fort Gordon and just being surrounded by Signal people all the time, helped and hurt in a little bit. On the one hand, like, I really enjoyed being a platoon leader. I loved being a leader. I was hoping to take company command someday. But I also knew that I was not the most technically savvy Signal officer in the Army. And it really would take me a lot of effort to get to where I would hope to be like the best Signal officer. So that was a little bit of motivation to do well in something that I knew I could do well at, which would be, you know, something more inclined to what I'd studied in school, doing political science, that kinds of logical problems, things like that. Seemed like it would be a lot more fun than, you know, remembering how to subnet. So that was something. And also, one thing that I found out during my first year that I was applying was I actually had a couple of senior leaders who were like a battalion XO, who were majors, senior majors. They had also applied for the FLEP program and didn't get accepted, and they were a little bit bitter about it, so they kind of tried to throw me off. But other Signal officers that I worked with, like my company commander, was 100% supportive. You know, if this is what you want to do, you need to go all in, and this is how you're going to make the Army better for everybody. So there was a couple of different perspectives. I decided to just go with the, I'm committed to the Army, not to the Signal Corps. I would stay in the Army as a Signal officer if I could, but I would really like to do JAG. That's another option. So kind of split it and see what happens.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, at the end of the day, it's pretty much, it's still, you're still serving in the capacity. So very good. Thank you. All right, so I'd like to transition to our next question. While you were in law school, what were your commitments to the Army? I know that's a real concern for people, that you'll be in law school and then Uncle Sam's going to be consistently trying to call you back on mandatory training or doing exercises, something like that. So while you were in law school, did you have any obligations? And if so, what were they?
There were some very minimal obligations during the actual academic year. Of course, you have to stay on top of your annual training. So don't let your cyber awareness lapse, because then you might not have computer access, or trying to stay up on all of those online trainings that you might have. So that's just something to keep in mind while you're in the academic year during the school year. But other than that, you don't have to go to formation. You belong to the student detachment, which is based out of Fort Jackson. So they will just email you like every couple months, make sure that you're still alive. You might have to, depending on where you are in law school, you might be assigned to a local base for healthcare or for administrative actions, something like that. So I went to University of Maryland, so I was assigned to Fort Meade for all of my healthcare. So I still had to go down there for different events. And you have to do an APFT twice a year. But other than that, during the school year, you're just a regular student. You don't wear your uniform. You don't go to formation. You don't really have to do anything other than go to school and really focus on your studies. During the summer, though, you don't really have the option of taking a civilian internship like a lot of law students do. You can't go work for a firm or a judge, anything like that. You have to do on-the-job training with the Army, and this will be coordinated through the JAG Personnel Plans Division. They assign you somewhere. If you're going to be going TDY, it's usually about 8 weeks in the summer. If it's someplace nearby, then it's going to be from, I think, about a week or two after your last final to a week or two before classes start again. So for me, I did my summers. My first summer, I went to Fort Meade, and I worked in the OSJA office on Fort Meade Garrison. And that was interesting. They let me kind of rotate through some of the different offices. So I worked for the ad law section. I worked for the military justice section for a little bit. And I got to meet a lot of the JAGs that work at Fort Meade. And since that was close-ish to where I was living in Baltimore, That was one of the cases where I started right after finals, worked all the way up until classes started again, and just lived at home. My second summer, I was assigned to Fort Campbell, to 101st. And so that was an 8-week TDY period where I went to Fort Campbell, lived in a hotel there for 8 weeks, did kind of the same thing, rotated through the different sections, got to watch court martials, help out the trial counsels with some research. I got to work a little bit in legal assistance, and the summers are really there to, you're not a full lawyer, but you do have some Army experience, and you can, you know, legal assistance, you can help the lawyers with identifying issues, with giving good advice, with advising commanders, things that a regular intern might be able to do with a little extra Army experience. And then, and I think those summers also really help with developing relationships. For example, like one of the JAGs that I worked with at Fort Campbell actually recently was here in Iraq. So I was able to look up some of her notes. I called her up and said, hey, do you remember me? Like, I worked with you at Fort Campbell. I saw that you have notes on this job that I'm about to do in Iraq. So can you give me anything about it? So it is really good to be able to build those relationships, to know other JAGs before you jump in after graduation.
Very cool. Oh, wow. That really went above and beyond what I sort of would have ever expected with that question. I do have some follow-up questions. I'm like feverishly writing over here because, I mean, I'm obviously too old to do the FLET program, but I'm still very interested in at least communicating this well enough for those out there who are listening to this and are thinking about it. So in terms of the student detachment, what was your engagement like with the student detachment while you were in the program?
It was fairly minimal. Anyone who's ever had the pleasure of being assigned to the student detachment knows that they're very overwhelmed. Literally every Army officer or NCO or soldier, anybody who's in the Army who is doing a civilian schooling program is assigned to the student detachment. So they've got hundreds of people all over the world in lots of different programs. So they have a very small support company in Fort Jackson. So to get anything done, for example, if I wanted to get a leave form signed to be able to take leave over Christmas, which technically, since it was during the school year, I didn't have to take leave. I just wanted a leave form so that I could go space A somewhere. But it usually took, you know, 2-3 weeks to get a response from them on what it is that you needed to do. So there was a slow turnaround time, but they were very good about taking care of those little things that the company is supposed to be doing, like leave forms or reminding you to update your annual training, things like that.
Yeah, and I don't believe that sort of any job in particular entitles anyone to, you know, choice of duty station or preference in terms of programs, but holy smokes, if the student detachment commander is listening out there, kudos to you. You deserve all of it, because I can only imagine that that is a thankless job, and that there are, as you mentioned, probably thousands of officers that are currently in some program assigned to the student detachment. And being an AIT commander, we had a very small support team, and so I can't, and a lot of admin paperwork to do. So if they're out there, thanks for what you do. All right. So the second sort of question that I have from that is, in terms of preparing for the summer TDYs and the internships, as you put it, what can officers do who are currently in the FLET program, who maybe haven't started that? What can they do to prepare for those?
As far as preparing for it, just be aware that it's something that's going to be coming up, that it's something you're going to have to do. And sometimes it's flexible. Sometimes you can work with the assignment officer at PPTO to kind of get what you want. Like, I knew dual military couples who, one of them was in law school, one of them was assigned to a particular post. So for their summer, they were able to go and do their OJT time, their internship at that post where their spouse was. So that was a good opportunity for them to be able to, you know, be at home with their spouse and also get their summer requirements out of the way. But also, sometimes you're going to get something that you might not want. And sometimes you do have to be flexible. Because of my location, because I was in Baltimore, they did try to assign me to, I think it was an office at Fort Belvoir, but because it was within a short distance, it would not have been TDY. I would have had to drive from my house in downtown Baltimore to Fort Belvoir every single morning to do this job. And if you know anything about the DC area, it is not known for its light traffic at any time of day. So it would have ended up being like a 90-minute to 2.5-hour drive each way every single day to try to get to this position. So I kind of worked with them, wheedled a little bit, and got it moved up to Fort Meade, which was only 45 minutes away from where I lived. So that was an example where it might be more flexible, but also they do try to give you a wide variety of training during the summer. So you can see, like, one summer I did Fort Meade, which is garrison. It's a little bit smaller. It's mostly the NSA complex. It's not a force compost. Well, the second summer, they specifically wanted to send me to a number division, to a force compost, where you've got all of the infantry guys doing infantry guy things, and so their military justice load is a lot different. Balancing that, doing one summer someplace smaller, doing one summer at a division is something that they do try to do, especially if you don't have a whole lot of force comp experience before. I did try to kind of wheel out of the second summer as well and go back to Fort Meade, partially because I did enjoy my time at Fort Meade, but also the second summer I was actually about 6-7 months pregnant, so the thought of living in a hotel in Kentucky 7 months pregnant and working full-time for the 101st didn't seem that appealing to me, but ultimately I'm glad I did it. I did go, I enjoyed it, and that's just... And like, as far as preparing for the job, there's not a whole lot you can do because you don't really know what you're going to be doing until you get there. But just be aware that there are some options, there are things to consider. Another thing to consider, though, for the summers is typically they try not to make your first assignment as a regular JAG one of the places where you interned. So going into my posting at the end of law school, I knew I probably wasn't going to be going to Fort Meade, and I probably wasn't going to be going to Fort Campbell because that's where I'd interned. So if you're thinking about trying to ask for like Fort Bragg because you want to eventually be stationed at Fort Bragg, try not to intern there because that might rule it out later down the line.
Thanks, Hannah. Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. And in terms of the DC traffic, it's funny, my brother lives down there, and I'm going to be visiting him here in a few weeks, and I am not looking forward to driving down there, so.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yep. All right, I'd like to pivot to our next question. So my third question is that Army has a number of broadening and competitive programs that I feel like have a large scale of interest, but I really don't know what the application rate is like. Can you cue us in on how many people were in your cohort, how many people applied, if you know that, and what are some of the reasons that people don't get selected? What did you do to make yourself more competitive for this board?
Okay, so I did do a little bit of research on this question since you asked it specifically, and I looked at the last couple of years. So for 2017, the board that met this past December, they had 103 applications, completed applications that went to the board, and the average LSAT score was a 161. The average undergrad GPA was a 3.4, and of the 25 that were selected, 23 of them had an APFT score over 270. So that kind of gives you an idea of what the average class looks like. I'm willing to bet that a majority of, you know, the class that was selected is fairly close to these numbers. So that kind of gives you an idea. And that's been pretty consistent over the last couple of years. I think 2016, the average LSAT score was 163. 2015, it was 162. So that's something to think about if you're, you know, you're planning for the LSAT and you don't know what a good number is. 160s is probably pretty good. Score higher by all means if you can, but if you're, you know, you get that 163, 164 and you're disappointed with it, know that I'm not ever going to say settle and say that it's good enough, but it will be sufficient for an application. and usually it looks like there's about 100 to 110 applications that go to the board every year, and they can select up to 25 out of those applications. So those are the raw numbers. I can say that, of course, with this being averages, I do know FLEPs who got a perfect score on the LSAT, a lot that had, you know, a perfect undergrad GPA. But also I knew people who were really, really great officers who maybe weren't thinking about law school when they were in undergrad, so their GPA wasn't as great, or they took the LSAT while they were in Afghanistan, so it wasn't as ideal as if they had taken it at home. So those are things that the board's really going to, you can kind of qualify any really off-the-wall low scores that you might have in your personal statement that goes to the board. Some of the reasons that people don't get selected, obviously not having a complete board packet, you won't even get your foot in the door to be able to be considered. Or this is something that I've heard that I haven't sat on a board or been able to talk to anybody about the board process, but people who tend to sound very self-serving, who sound like they are just trying to get free law school, do their time, and then get out of the army, are, if that comes across in a paper board, then that's probably a bad thing. Whereas this board is really looking for officers who have done well in the army, who know the army, who love it, and who are willing to put in the time and to be great JAG officers and to really continue serving as they can. So that is something to consider. You do prepare a personal statement for the board about why you want to be a JAG officer, why this is the route you want to take, why you should be selected for FLEP. And so that's really your time to talk a little bit about any experience you've had with either lawyers specifically, good or bad, and why you want to be a lawyer, and specifically why you want to be an Army JAG attorney. And I already spoke a little bit about why I wanted to be in the Army, why I wanted to be a JAG to be able to help commanders, everything like this. So that kind of a statement is really important, and it's a huge, very heavily weighted part of the board that everyone sees and everyone's going to consider. So I think beyond the raw numbers that you can't always control, those are some of the things that you can do to prepare for the board. They're also going to look at all of your last OERs. So having good OERs, getting that top block, or at least getting a really good write-up is really important. And you can also have two or three letters of recommendation that will go to the board. And with those, usually they recommend that those come from someone who actually really knows you well, who can talk to your potential as an attorney, and who can it's better to have someone who knows you well than to have someone who is higher ranked, honestly, is what I've been told going into this board. So having an O6 who's worked with you and can say, you're a hard worker, you really think things through, you are a really good writer, is better than having a 4-star who doesn't really know you but is going to sign a letter. Also, as part of the application, you have to do an interview and get a letter of recommendation from your local staff judge advocate, which is usually an O6, whoever it is that's assigned to your post. So that's something that needs to be coordinated through someone in the SJ's office. Most offices will put out an announcement, usually in August, about when the applications open, about scheduling those and getting an office call with the SJA. The SJA that I interviewed with at Fort Gordon was really supportive. He was very he was very demanding, not demanding, but he asked for a lot with the applications. So he asked for, a writing sample. He asked for a copy of my undergrad transcripts. He talked to me a lot about, what brought me to the Army, what made me think about being a lawyer. He invited me to, come and watch court martials, do some work with some of the attorneys that were assigned there. So by the time he got to writing the letter, it was a very in-depth, opinion on whether or not I would be a good fit for the JAG Corps. So that's another requirement to keep in mind as you're getting ready for the application process.
I really appreciate that. It sounds like the SJA did his due diligence in terms of making sure that, that you are a right fit. I feel like sometimes people will ask for a letter of recommendation, and because we don't want to hurt people's feelings, we're like, oh yeah, no problem, I'll write you a letter, and whatnot. And it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't do the Army any favors if we're recommending people mm-hmm. who are otherwise not qualified for the program. And I already knew you would have been a great JAG anyways, but I know you, I hope, a little bit. And so, but I'm glad that, it's good to hear that for folks who are thinking about competing out there, that the SJA interview part is not going to be just, it's not a check the block. It's going to be, something you have to put a little bit of time and effort into.
Yeah, I think every office does it a little bit differently and has different expectations. Some of the bigger offices that are very busy, they might not be as in-depth as my SJA was, but also it's really important, I think, to put forth a lot of effort. Like for the first office call I had with him, I wore my blues, so I showed up in full uniform, knocked in, reported in, and he was really impressed by that. And that was a tip that I had gotten, again, from the other guy who was applying for FLEP at the same time. He highly recommended doing that just because it shows, it kind of gives them an idea of what you're going to look like in the courtroom. You know, if you're going to be in front of a judge arguing a case, you're going to be in your blues. You need to be able to stand up straight and introduce yourself and talk straight. So making that really good first impression, I think, is important. It's not required, but I think it is important.
Yeah, I recommend all my cadets. They ask me, like, hey, what advice do you have in terms of being an Army officer? And I always recommend a report to your first duty station. Like, truly report, because you're technically reporting to a unit. Mm-hmm. That could be antiquated. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an older timer, even though I still consider myself somewhat young. But I think it's great. So, All right. I would also like to ask one other question related to that question, and that is, the program is open to second lieutenants. You mentioned about, hey, having a good OER in there doesn't hurt. Were there any second lieutenants that were selected for FLEP in your program, in your cohort, and what do you think made them stand out?
I don't recall. In my particular cohort, I don't think we had any second lieutenants, but part of that is because, well, you can be a second lieutenant when you apply. You have to have at least 2 years time in service by the time you start law school. So by the time you get to law school, you've hopefully had your 18 months in and you've already pinned first lieutenant. So that's usually something to keep in mind. And so I don't think it's a very rare situation to see a second lieutenant, I think, picked up. And usually if it is, it's because they might have had maybe a year or something like that of prior enlisted service that counted towards that 2 years. So that might have been a consideration that, you know, they were enlisted and then their time in school didn't count. And then they came on active duty, so they've only been a lieutenant for a couple of months, but they are technically eligible for the program. So that might be something that happens. But for the most part, I would say most of us probably had, an average was probably 4 to 4.5 years at the time that we started law school. We all had a couple of OERs in our record. We'd done our basic lieutenant time. And I think in my particular cohort, we only had 2 or 3 that were lieutenants when they started, and they were definitely captains by the time they graduated.
Okay, yeah, so that makes sense. By the time that they would actually get through the application process, they would have pinned on. A little bit of a sidebar. I know that medical corps officers who end up going through one of the numerous programs the Army has for commissioning medical officers do the whole, they lose half of their time, like they go into a different year group. I forgot what regulation that was. Pardon me, everyone out there. But is that a thing with the JAG commissionees as well who go through the FLEP program? Do you know?
So one of the best parts about the FLEP program is the entire time that you're in law school, you are considered on active duty. So you're getting full active duty pay, you're getting your BH, you're getting all of your benefits, and all of that time counts towards your time in service. All of that counts towards your time as a captain or whatever it is. However, the way that the JAG Corps does promotions is they create not necessarily like year groups like the regular Army does, but they do everything based on your date of rank. So, but most direct commissionees, the people who come in straight from law school, get accepted to the JAG Corps and then commission. They commission as first lieutenants, and they usually do 6 to 8 months as a first lieutenant before they pin captain. So when you're looking at, everyone that's going up to this next major board, we're looking at a group of people where most of them pinned captain, I want to say in 2011, I think, for this upcoming JAG major board. And so most of them, that means, you know, they've been in the Army for 7-ish years. But for the FLEPs that are on that board, they had 3.5 years before they pinned captain, whereas most people only had 6 months. So they've got, 10 to 11 years as in the Army, they've got that time in service, they had that time as a lieutenant, but everyone's only been a captain for that 7 years. So it's not that you get pushed to a different year group, but the how they do promotions and when you're eligible for promotion throws it off a little bit. I think for me, I was year group 09, who was being looked at for their primary zone major board this year, but my primary zone JAG major board isn't until next year. So it really only pushed me off about a year.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Yeah, that clarifies it. Perfect. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In our next episode, we'll have part two of Everything You Need to Know About the FLEP with Captain Hannah Huh. This wraps up today's Leader Hall podcast. In our next episode, we'll turn for part two of our episode on Everything You Need to Know About the FLEP program. You can connect with us on iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through our Facebook pages, Junior Officer Forum, and our Twitter handle, Leaders_Huddle or JO_Forum. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others.
The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.